This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you, and thank you very much for inviting me. And I'm really happy because what I heard so far this morning resonates with what we see at the OECD. And we have the same figures, so that's a really good point. It's a good start. And so I'm Fabrice, and I'm working at the IMHE, which stands for Institutional Management for Higher Education, which is the OECD program for higher education management and governance, composed of some 250 members, universities, ministries, representatives, agencies, funding authorities, like HEFKI, for instance. Today, I wanted to give you an overview of trends occurring on internationalization, but also my aim is also to pinpoint some of the challenges and renewed challenges that has been raised by internationalization, by governments, institutions themselves, and the OECD, and to raise the probably the key questions that will fantastically echo those raised by my colleagues this morning. First, and very briefly, and you will know why, I will start by some... What is the most visible at the OECD? That is student mobility. And insisting on this dramatic growth of student mobility over the past three decades, so I said we have the same digits, so 3.3 million of mobile students today. 70% of foreign students, of international students, go study abroad in the OECD area, which means now 34 countries. And amongst all the students who study abroad, 49% are Asians, and they study in the OECD. Another trend, and I will come to that in a minute, is the emergence of new players. And while we focus very much on students' mobility, there are no clear evidence on mobility of academics and staff. I mean, the figures are really scarce on that matter. So where the students go to study? Here you have, in fact, the percentage of all foreign students enrolled by destinations. For instance, today we can say that the UK receives some 10% of all foreign students worldwide here. And the difference between the purple bars and the spot is the time span, so from 2000 to 2008. What shows that graph is that some countries are losing ground, like the US, for instance, which dropped to 18%, the UK and others, while others are new players, especially the Russian Federation. I would like to show you another graph, which is probably is more interesting, because we no longer count the foreign students, but we count now the international students, that who are the students who go abroad to with the purpose of studying in higher education. So compared to foreign students, the international students are those who either have their prior education in another country or those who are not permanent residents of their country of study. So, of course, we started in 2008. This is why I can't show you the changes that occurred. But this is going to be the indicator that will be taken by the OECD now, because it's a good indication of the magnitude of the student's mobility. I would like to insist here is the main factors in student choice when they go abroad. There are lots of them, but there are three major ones. The first remains the language of instruction. And this is why many countries now offer courses taught in English, like in the Nordic countries, for instance. Second is the tuition fee policy, which is an interesting issue in some countries. What we see is that high tuition fees don't necessarily discourage prospective international students to study in that country, as long as the quality of education and its likely return to make the investment worthwhile do exist. It means that if I formulate it differently, in choosing similar educational opportunities, cost consideration might play a role. It means that the key issue is also the quality of education. And we know that the more you charge students and international students, and the more demanding they are, and not only on extracurricular activities or student induction, but also the quality of the teachers, of the teaching delivery, and so on. The third factor is the immigration policy. Some have encouraged temporary or permanent immigration of the international students, like Australia, Canada, New Zealand, etc. For instance, they can apply visa upon graduation, and so on. And it may be either a facilitator or a barrier to student mobility. And then you have a bulk mass of other factors that are difficult to be measured on the reputation of the institution, job opportunities, and also the portability of grants and of credits, like the ECTS. But here, in a nutshell, and I won't elaborate on that because it has been already touched upon by my colleagues, it's beyond student mobility. In fact, they concern 4% of students worldwide. And there are probably the happy few. The 90% of students worldwide may be concerned by other forms of internationalization, either of the curricula, either of the infusion approach, meaning to phase in cross-cultural issues in the curriculum, for instance, or in teaching delivery, in the assessment of students, in the extracurricular activities, the development of international studies, like Master for International Studies, or the establishment of centers for international studies. In Korea, for instance, they established 10 new centers for international studies in 10 years. There are a harmonization process that may lead to an acceleration of the internationalization, but there is not only the Bologna process. This is the only political process that exists in the world, but there are other forms also of area of higher education of that kind. And we have the development of offshore and also dual and joint programs. We particularly like the joint program when we talk about internationalization, because it's probably a good way for universities to think about the teaching issues. How do you assess the students, how do you treat them in the classroom? And even though in some institutions there are just a few joint programs, we see that in terms of impact and awareness of what internationalization means within the university, there are crucial elements. So to assess this, to address internationalization, institutions and governments have established a different kind of strategy, what we could name international strategies. The first and the probably most well-known is what we call the mutual understanding strategies, when this strategy pursues above all political, cultural, and academic development aid objectives, so a Fulbright program, for instance, or Erasmus program in Europe. Other strategy consists of keeping the mutual understanding strategy, but you target a specific population, especially on the most talented students. Then you may add another strategy, which is targeting students who may generate incomes in return. And so higher education becomes a kind of exploitation of education services. And others also add a strategy of building capacity, for instance, to fulfill a shortage of national skills or to compensate for other lacks in their own higher education systems. But there are also other dimensions. This is why I put a question mark. And these strategies are in the hands of the institutions, but also very dependent on the government's positions. This is why the balance to strike between the two is always moving, and there is no ideal on that. So what are these dimensions I want you to talk about when entering in a broader strategy? Internationalization can offer valuable insights, the first for faculty and students. The first being at the level of the program and curriculum design, for instance. How do they embed international perspective? What kind of provisions could meet all institutions' needs? Is there a risk to offer too wide range of provision and to undermine the core identity of the institution, for instance? These kind of questions. In terms of research activities, we briefly touched upon that issue this morning. We assume that the presence of international academic students in labs fosters international networks and yields externalities in terms of technology transfer, sharing scientific equipment, and so on. But how to carry out research with an international team, how to open the mind of your national students, and how to, conversely, how to integrate the best students coming from abroad, how to align various diverse working methods in research teams. Another dimension deals with the teaching practice. How does teaching practice respond to international students' needs? And in return, how teaching practices equip students that with skills that offer them broader perspective to understand the challenge of the world of today and tomorrow? How to combine several pedagogical cultures? Or what are the best learning environments to index smoothly the international students and faculty? And another group of items that relate to internationalization regards the services and extracurriculum activities, tailored support for students, international campus, and so on. But there are also a dimension of internationalization for institutions themselves. We know by experience that research and doctoral training are the quintessential international marker of many research incentive institutions. And we know also that many first degree or vocational training institutions have no active global agenda as such. But on the other hand, we see also a trend of non-research incentive institutions who no longer confine themselves to local operations. Many American community colleges, for instance, or Australian vocational education training institutions sell places to international students, have established offshore operations in Asia, for instance. So it's no longer true that only the research incentives are now internationalized. And internationalization is also a lever for institutions to get a worldwide reputation. And I pinpoint that point because it's crucial to anticipate or be equipped to meet the unpredictable challenges resulted from globalization. You can foster or not foster internationalization in your university, but you can't live away from globalization, which is a fact. So even an institution located in a remote area, far from any research centers, all will be affected by the globalization. But when you address internationalization, there are some challenges institutions and governments alike have to put up with. The first is the mobility flows. How to optimize mobility flows, both incoming and outgoing, consistently with the national goals. How to promote the attractiveness of your system, encouraging at the same time the mobility of national students, maximizing the return of internationalization. Another challenge deals with equity. Internationalization policies need to ensure that the intake of international students does not displace or limit access of domestic students to higher education. Or also the additional cost incurred by studying abroad may leave aside some students who are not from high socioeconomic backgrounds. Another challenge is how to protect and safeguard the institution and the quality of the programs, and to ensure that the development of internationalization may not affect the reputation of the provider of higher education, or that your outgoing students will graduate from a reliable institution. And this raises the question of the quality assurance of the internationalization per se. And we can say that still today, systematic monitoring of and evaluation of internationalization is, in general, globally speaking, quite weak. And existing QS systems in higher education often not adequately address internationalization. There are some exceptions, and I think the UK is quite in advance on that through the memorandum of agreement with other agencies, for instance, or through the audit reviews of partnership arrangements. There are two options. One is to improve the quality of the internationalization, to capture all the dimensions of internationalization. And the second option is how to internationalize the QA system. You hire an international expert and so on. So both options are underway, but I admit that there are still much improvements to be achieved on the QA of internationalization. Issues at stake, and this is what all these issues has led to the new project the OECD is launching on internationalization. First is that mobility has overshadowed the other dimensions, as we said. Are international students agents for internationalization? This question is raised by Jay Knight very recently. We have the assumption that more foreign students on campus will produce more international institutional culture. Is that true? I don't have the answer, but it's not that automatic. Is a strong worldwide reputation a proxy for quality? Are we sure? We have probably all in mind some cases of questionable admission or exit standards. That internationalization doesn't always translate into improved quality or high standards. What is measurable is not always what counts. It is true that the benefits of internationalization is often measured quantitatively, number of international students, foreign faculty, institutional agreements, etc. And when we review, for instance, the list of international agreements, we often have a large group of paper-based agreements and a limited one on the real productive partnerships. And there are other dimensions that are not measured, but that probably are crucial, and those who bring significant benefits of internationalization. So we claim that on this other dimension, there is a lack of reflection, as pinpointed by Hans de Witt also very recently. Internationalization has become a synonym of doing good, and students, academia, policymakers, people are less into questioning its effectiveness and uncertain nature, an instrument to improve the quality of education and research. And this is true that many, many articles, and the research also is very much focused on student mobility. And as I said earlier, it concerns only 4% of the students. So what about the 93% left? This is what we try to address through the new OECD project called Managing Internationalization, trying to grasp the evolving perception of internationalization and how institutions are making use of it, and trying to identify factors, instruments, approaches, reference points for strategic management and institutional practice, including students' mobility issues, of course, but going beyond this student mobility. And we have set up a group of 15 to 20 institutions, so we'll end up with some 18 institutions, including for the UK, Plymouth Institute of Education, London, and the University of Sheffield, to think collaboratively on the issues at stake for an institution, and then to scope what kind of activities could be proposed so that institutions could be equipped to address appropriately the issues related to internationalization. How do you manage the quality of teaching when you have international students, for instance? And we have framed the OECD projects around these four questions that will be discussed next week on April the 1st with the participating institutions. How does internationalization reflect in the institution-wide governance and management? Is it only assigned to the VC, to academic affairs, or to the Bureau for Foreign Students, or does it permeate all the layers of the institution? How is internationalization perceived by all players within the institution, including teachers on the job, for instance? What does it mean to be a truly international institution? And we added truly, because many claim they are truly international. That's not always true. I mean, it depends what you can count. And how, in terms of impact, how has internationalization spurred on innovation in any of the activities? Can we prove, for instance, that pedagogy has improved thanks to internationalization? Probably yes, probably no. We have assumptions our objective would be to try to see how we could appraise that and to share some practices. So we try with this project to be as collaborative as possible, to use the best of the diversity of the IMHE membership. Also to be inclusive, because we don't claim to be the only one to launch a project on internationalization. There are others, the International Association of Universities, for instance, help institutions to define a strategy. Robin, you told me about the higher academic HEA project on teaching for international students, for instance, and there are others. So we want to be inclusive and associate and partner with other associations, and would like to be incremental. That for the first time at the OECD, instead of providing directly a service, would like to set up collaboratively with the participants the objectives and scopes of the institution, and then to propose at the very end what kind of activities. This is why today I can't tell you we're going to do benchmarking, we're going to do peer review. I don't know today. The idea is to compel the institutions to think out the box and not only focusing on the student mobility, which is the dominant and prevailing phenomenon. It's not that we're against student mobility. We want to address the other underpinning dimensions. So the launching meeting will be next week, and we already know that the final results will be in September 2012. In the between, I will be happy to inform you on the progress of the project. Thank you for your attention.